The exciting landscape in which we live is due in part to the presence of volcanoes. They shaped the landscape. They make some of the more interesting parts of our skyline. And as Mount St. Helens showed 36 years ago this week, they are not necessarily dead. Here's our chance to get a better understanding of our pointy neighbors, even the unpointy ones for that matter. Dr. Seth Moran is the chief scientist at the Cascade Volcano Observatory in Vancouver, Washington. He'll give a geology lecture tonight at Southwestern Oregon Community College in Coos Bay. That'll be at 7 p.m. called Volcanoes in Our Backyard, Hazards, Risks, and What We Can Do. Dr. Moran, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning.
So, first of all, how many volcanoes are in the backyard that have even a slender chance of waking up in the next few, I don't know, centuries or so?
In the Cascades of Washington and Oregon, there are 10 volcanoes that we think have a chance, at least, of erupting in our lifetimes, and of those, 8 have a decent chance, and also have some significant hazards in terms of exposure of people living in low-lying river valleys that might be exposed to lahars and things like that.
What's a lahar?
A lahar is a mud flow that comes off of a volcano, often as a result of lava flowing on top of snow and ice and melting the snow and ice rapidly, and that water coming down, picking up lots of loose soil and bulking up into a mud flow.
Is this what happened to Spirit Lake and the Toutle River in the Mount St. Helens eruption?
That's exactly what happened. In the Toutle River, two large lahars came down the different branches of the Toutle River on the afternoon of May 18 and eventually made it all the way down to the Columbia River and wound up choking up the Columbia River to the point where container ships couldn't get up to the Port of Portland for a number of weeks.
Wow. You know, it's amazing how long those effects stayed. I didn't move to the Northwest until the mid-80s, and on a train trip in 1986, I was able to see along the Cowlitz River, still where there was evidence of the eruption from that many years before.
That's right, and it's still there today, and it's actually still an issue that that is being grappled with on the Toutle River. There's still an awful lot of sediment that is not stabilized, and the Army Corps of Engineers has put together a device called the sediment retention structure, which is upriver of Kid Valley, that's basically holding back a lot of the sediment that otherwise would have made its way down the Toutle into the Cowlitz and ultimately into the Columbia, and causing a lot more effort to have to be expended to remove all that sediment.
So, Dr. Moran, why are volcanoes so prevalent in this part of the world?
Well, the short answer is plate tectonics. We've got the Juan de Fuca plate that's diving underneath the North American plate. We're all on the North American plate, and the Juan de Fuca plate's offshore. It's moving east. We're moving west, and the two plates are colliding along the subduction zone. That part of that plate interface is stuck, and that's the origin of the next large earthquake in our future. Then as that plate continues down, it heats up. Some of the water that's contained in the Juan de Fuca plate gets hot and moves into the overlying North American plate and starts to melt some rock. And that rock, some of that molten rock, makes its way to the surface and gives us our volcanoes.
So it's friction. That's the heat?
No, as you go down to the Earth, temperatures get hotter. Uh-huh. And best understanding that we have now is that there's some water that's in the sediments that are in the Juan de Fuca plate, and as that plate goes down and gets to, you know, 30, 40, 50 miles, it gets pretty hot down there, and that water gets pretty hot, and it moves up into the overlying plate, and the hot water makes it, or hot fluids basically make it easier for some of that rock to melt.
We like to look at artists' renderings of what prehistoric Northwest looked like. Way back in time, was there a period, though, when there was a lot of volcanic activity, when many volcanoes erupted close in time and space to each other?
For sure, going back millions of years, the volcanic activity in where we are now, there was a lot more of it. The Cascade Range right now is... if you look at other volcanic arcs around the world, our arc is not that active, you know, particularly in comparison to places like Indonesia and Alaska, where it's routine to have eruptions, several eruptions a year. We're not in that same ballpark, and that partly reflects some of the dynamics of our zone, our subduction zone. The subduction zone is not the two plates aren't moving very fast. And so there's not a really significant rate of subduction and sort of a rate of adding new fuel the magma production factory.
So I noticed just yesterday some terms like shield volcano. Are there many different types of volcanoes?
Yeah, there's different I guess geomorphic is the scientific term, but there are different types of volcanoes that are loosely based on the type of magma that comes out. So a shield volcano is a prototype for that would be the Hawaiian volcanoes, which are these broad, relatively low slope, but very tall mountains, and they reflect the type of lava that comes out, which is a type that we call basalt. It's fairly fluid, tends to flow for long distances, and so that gives you these long, low-slope profiles. In the Cascades, the type of magma that comes out is a lot stickier, and so we don't get those broad shield-type things. We instead get what we call stratovolcanoes, which are steeper, blockier, and sometimes more explosive.
So how long does it take a stratovolcano to build up to the heights that we see today? How long did it take a Mount Hood or a Mount McLaughlin to get up to its current height?
Well, usually it's a number of tens of thousands of years, but of course it entirely depends upon the rate of eruptive activity. And volcanoes tend to erupt in pulses, and those pulses can be separated by thousands of years of inactivity. St. Helens right now is in a period of time where, for the last 3,000 years, it's been very very frequently active, averaging an eruption probably every 50-100 years or so, and so it has built itself up quite fast over the last those last numbers of thousands of years. In contrast, Mount Jefferson, which is south of Mount Hood, hasn't had an eruption in, as far as we know, over 10,000 years. So that cone obviously was built a lot longer ago.
Dr. Seth Moran is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking volcanoes, which is his comfort zone. He's the chief scientist at the Cascade Volcano Observatory in Vancouver, Washington, across the river from Portland. He'll be lecturing tonight at 7 at Southwestern Oregon Community College about volcanoes in our backyard. You can ask some questions now. Share some stories about maybe you were around to see the Mount St. Helens eruption 36 years and 2 days ago. 800-838-3760 to share it by phone. By email, it's jx@jeffnet.org. So we're just talking about Mount St. Helens and the queen of the moment here. What is happening at Mount St. Helens these days?
Well, these days, we're seeing signs that the volcano is getting ready to erupt again, although those signs are not saying that there's anything imminent at all. They're very subtle signs, and we're only seeing them because we have a really good volcano monitoring network around Mount St. Helens. The signs include things like very, very small earthquakes that occurring in a way that's a little bit different from earthquakes that are in the area around the volcano, and that makes us think that those earthquakes are occurring in response to some magma coming in. We also have some GPS instruments that are around the volcano, and over the last 5 or 6 years, those instruments have moved net about half an inch, which is pretty small potatoes when you think about how much a half inch is. But the fact that all of them are moving in a systematic way, they're all moving away from the volcano, indicates to us that there is some new magma coming in at a depth of a couple of miles below the surface. This is similar to a pattern we saw back in the 80s and the 90s in between the 1980-86 eruptive period and the 2004-2008 eruptive period. We had a similar interpretation back then that there's a little bit of recharge going on and it's setting the stage for the next eruption. And we're basically seeing the same thing now. We look at that as kind of a form of a volcano early warning, but the early part of it is years to decades down the road.
And would you say the movement was like an inch a year?
No, it's for any one of these instruments, these GPS instruments, they've moved about a half inch over the space of 6-7 years.
Oh, okay.
So it's very small, and you only record that if you're out there for a long time recording continuously.
But I was reading just yesterday in the Mount St. Helens eruption, some parts of the mountain are rising 5 feet a day. Is that right?
In the build-up to May 18, 1980, that's right. The north side of the volcano was bulging outwards at the rate of between 5 or 6 feet a day. And it took a little while for folks to figure that out. You know, back then, one of the ways that you can do that would be to look at pictures you've taken different days and see how things have changed. But of course, back then, you took a picture, then you had to take the film into a developer and wait for a day or two, and then get the picture out. And then it wasn't on a computer; it was a picture. So looking at that data was a lot harder. The way that people finally started figuring it out was putting reflectors up on the dome itself, and then shooting lasers from fixed points off those reflectors, and that gave a distance. But it took a little while to get that going, and of course that was very, very hazardous work to be getting up on the volcano and putting the reflectors on there.
Boy, no kidding. So between 1980 and the events that have happened since, I mean, how much has Mount St. Helens added to our knowledge of how volcanoes work?
There's a lot of answers to that question. it was a marker event in so many ways, not just scientific. Obviously, it was a huge had a huge impact for the communities around the volcano. 57 people lost their lives. There was a really large search and rescue effort that followed afterwards. But in terms of society living with volcanoes, I think there were a couple of things that that people experienced, certainly in the United States for the first time, but also witnessed using modern technology for the first time, and that included the ashfall part of it. The ash went a long ways, and there was an awful lot of it. Yakima got upwards of about half a foot, and the whole issue of how do you deal with that was something that people hadn't really ever had to contemplate before, certainly in the United States in modern times. And the questions about how do you keep your car working, how do you drive down the road. There were stories of tractor trailers enforcing a 5-mile-an-hour speed limit going up I-5 so that the ash wouldn't get blown into the air by passing cars and make it impossible for everybody else to drive. So that was a thing. And the other thing was the Lahar part of it, these volcano mud flows down the Toodle River. There were two really big waves that came down, very impressive, very, very destructive. Were shot live by TV camera crews flying over the events as they happened. And that's, there's nothing like seeing and recording it to really have it imprint in your brain. But also sort of how long lived the recovery is from Lahar in particular. We've learned it's decades. It takes a volcanic landscape at least decades to recover from something like that and get back to a point where the river drainages are stable and people can live next to them. So that's something that is important to have moving forward. If other volcanoes besides St. Helens have an eruption that's something like that, we know that Lahar hazards are going to be the longest lived hazard that people are going to have to deal with.
Dr. Seth Moran, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, chief scientist at the Cascade Volcano Observatory in Vancouver, lecturing tonight at 7 at Southwestern Oregon Community College about volcanoes in our backyard. Everything you always wanted to know about volcanoes nearby, here's your chance to get in on the conversation. 800-838-3760 to join us by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Let's go to Mark in Reading. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning.
As one takes the train on the west slopes of Mount Shasta, there appears to be a large amount of ejecta, giant volcanic rock that looked like they were tossed miles away from Mount Shasta at one point. And I'm wondering if that's indeed the case or if there's something else going on there.
Okay. Thanks for that, Mark.
Yeah. So I'm not exactly sure what the caller was thinking of with the ejecta part of it, but there is this sort of area north and west of Shasta that has all these little lumpy hills. The first time I saw them, they looked like a whole bunch of little volcanoes. It turns out what that is landscape that was formed by a gigantic landslide that came off of Mount Shasta a number of tens of thousands of years ago, sort of, an ancestral version of it. It was a big, big collapse, kind of like what happened at St. Helens on May 18th, 1980. And in fact, one of the ways that people sort of figured out what caused that landscape around Mount Shasta was by seeing what happened at St. Helens and looking and seeing the sort of similar kind of hummocky topography with lumps all over the place. And that sort of helped people understand mechanistically what happened to create that landscape.
I was just understanding from reading about the 1980 eruption at Mount St. Helens. So the landslide actually caused the eruption. The land moved away, uncapping the mountain, essentially?
Yeah, that's the story. That's what made the volcanoes, that eruption such cataclysmic, was the instantaneous removal of the cap. And that's, you know, equivalent to you shake up the soda bottle and then you flip off the cap really quickly and out comes this jet of stuff. If you shake up the soda bottle and instead very loosely tighten the cap, you'll get a little bit of fizz, a little bit of fizz, a little bit of fizz, but you won't get this big jet coming out. So it was that sort of instantaneous removal that was caused by the landslide that really gave that eruption its tremendous power.
If a volcano is dormant now, Dr. Moran, is it likely to stay dormant?
Well, so that's where geology comes in. The geologic record is our prime informant for what's likely to happen in the future. And geologic record tells us that, like Mount Jefferson, it's been a long time, 10,000 years. That's getting a while, and you know, you can start asking questions about whether or not that's indicating that Jefferson is sort of seized up and it's done. But there have been other volcanoes, Mount Hood being one of them, that have paused for longer than 10,000 years, and then have picked back up again. Just because a volcano hasn't erupted in a while, on a human time scale, certainly on a thousands of year time scale, does not mean for sure that it's not going to pick back up again.
Of the 10 that you mentioned that could erupt in our lifetime, are those largely in Washington State or some of them in Oregon?
They're split evenly between Washington and Oregon. Yeah. And actually, if you go back over the last 10,000 years, there's been much more magma coming out of the ground in Oregon than in Washington. It's a little counterintuitive because of course, we all think of St. Helens in 1980, and that was a huge eruption. But going back a couple thousand years, there were some very large outpourings of lava out of fissure vents in the Sisters area.
So what's the place that's most likely to go on the Oregon side?
Well, it's any one of those five. In terms of, if I had to put my chits down, it would be hard to pick one. They've all got different things going for them and against them. And Mount Hood is the most seismically active volcano, and it's also the one that's erupted most recently of all the Oregon volcanoes that erupted back in the 1790s, shortly before Lewis and Clark came out. We just had a swarm there the other day that had a couple of magnitude 2s in it. That might be something that you could say, well, maybe that's the one that's more likely. On the other hand, the Three Sisters volcanic area had an intrusion of magma that was detected by satellite over a decade ago. And that intrusion was at a depth of 3 or 4 miles. It wasn't quite beneath the volcanoes themselves. You could sort of look at that and go, well, there's new magma that came in there. Maybe those are the volcanoes that are going to go next. Then you could flip to Newberry, and Newberry actually has a magma body, magma at shallow depths. We know about that from geophysical imaging. We know there's a lot of hot water that's in the caldera itself, and maybe that would be a candidate. So you can sort of make arguments in favor of a number of them. But the geologic record's really what we have to go on, and all of them have basically the same kind of rate of eruptive activity over the last number of thousands of years, except for Mount Jefferson.
All right, so I know at the Cascade Volcano Observatory you're looking at volcanoes in Oregon and Washington. Let's go a little further south to Mount Shasta because you appear to have some knowledge about it. Is there any chance it could get active again, or Black Butte nearby?
Sure, yeah. Mount Shasta falls in the same category as the 10 that we concern ourselves with here. It's not something that's produced an eruption as recently as, say, Mount Hood. And it also hasn't, in its lifetime, which goes back hundreds of thousands of years, it hasn't really blown itself apart the way that St. Helens has done repeatedly. But it also has the issue of people living nearby, the I-5 corridor going right by it, so it's a place where it wouldn't take much to cause a big problem.
Well, I know you focus on the Cascades, but you will be in Coos Bay tonight. Are there undersea volcanoes close to Oregon's coast that are of concern?
Well, there for sure are undersea volcanoes, not quite close to the coast, and they're way down underwater, a mile or so, and they're not things that we concern ourselves with here in at the Cascade Volcano Observatory. We're pretty land based, And they're fascinating things to study. There's very little that we really know about those underwater systems because they're so hard to access. And I know there's some really phenomenal work that's being done out of Coos Bay by University of Oregon, Oregon State, University of Washington. A number of universities have research, ongoing research out there to look at the whole rift system that's along the Juan de Fuca plate.
With the zoom in computer capabilities, I mean, we're so much farther along than what you were describing with trying to get your film developed in 1980. I can imagine the knowledge about volcanoes has probably multiplied since St. Helens erupted.
It's easily multiplied, and also the number of things that we can do to detect precursory phenomena, detect signs of restlessness, has also grown just exponentially. And it's actually has a lot to do with the explosion of technology and the fact that everything that we have now has these little microcomputers that tell you where you are. So, you know, back in 1980, if you were going to take pictures, you first had to survey your location and write that down. And if you really wanted to have the pictures be of scientific use, you had to do that. Now all of our cameras have these GPS chips in them that record the lat long of every picture that you take. And so you know, that's right there is a huge thing. The resolution that we get out of those pictures is just as good as the single lens reflex cameras that we were all using back in the 1980s. And they're a lot cheaper and they're a lot easier to use. So just from that one perspective, it's been a big improvement.
Well, we've learned a lot, certainly. We learned a lot just in the couple minutes we got to spend with you. Seth Moran, Dr. Seth Moran, is the chief scientist at the Cascade Volcano Observatory in Vancouver. His geology lecture tonight at Southwestern Oregon Community College will be at 7 o'clock at the Hale Center in Coos Bay. It's called Volcanoes in Our Backyard, Hazards, Risks, and What We Can Do. Thanks so much for giving us a preview, Dr. Moran.
You're welcome.
All right, take it easy.